It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today in Scotland, politicians making their final pleas to Scottish voters on this, the last day of campaigning before they head to the polls to vote on independence. Opinion polls put the two sides neck and neck, the yes and the no. This is the Thursday historic referendum, which could see Scotland split from the United Kingdom. Polls suggest around 8% of voters remain undecided. So this hour, we want to explore how Scotland came to join the United Kingdom and the long history of the Scottish independent movement and what a yes vote for Scottish independence could mean for Scotland, for the UK, for the US, for the world. Here to give us some expertise and answer some of these questions, Derek Wilson is in our Des Moines studio, global practitioner in residence at Drake University currently, also law professor at the University of Nantes in France, and assistant director of the Drake Law Summer in France program. Derek Wilson, thank you so much for coming into our studio today.
You're welcome, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank everyone in Des Moines for the welcome that I've had at Drake University. That's the law school, but also the International Centre. It really has been, you know, phenomenal. It really has been quite amazing, the welcome that I've had.
We want to reach out to our listeners. If you have any questions about the referendum on Scottish independence this hour, Derek Wilson will be with us the entire hour. Join us, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Before we get to the actual vote, the consequences of the vote, please tell us a little bit about the history, how Scotland came to join the United Kingdom.
Well, perhaps the first thing that I should do is give a bit of detail about where Scotland is. It might not be immediately evident to everybody what Scotland is. It's, if you think of the country that a lot of people refer to as England, in fact, we are the northern part of Great Britain, and England is the southern part of that island.
Island is called Great Britain, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
And so this is the northern reaches of that island.
That's right. And Scotland was basically defined by the Romans in the first century when they created a wall to defend their kingdom from the people of the north. They decided not to go any further north. And the Hadrian's Wall basically defines, is quite close to what the border is at the moment between Scotland and England. And basically by separating the Celtic tribes at that time, there was a slight difference between the Celts of the north and then the Celts of the south. And this was accentuated later when the Anglo-Saxons came in the 7th century, and mixed with the Celts to the south of Hadrian's Wall. So this created this idea of the Anglo-Saxons and the Celts, so that when England finally came into existence in about the 9th or 10th century, for Scottish people, it was simply the idea of not being English that was much more important to us than anything else, really. We were the Celtic tribes to the north of the Anglo-Saxons, who were not English. So once the Kingdom of England was established, you have a kingdom in Scotland that springs up basically as a bulwark against that, the Celts to the north. And you know, as you go forward in history, you reach the time of, perhaps some of your viewers have seen the film Braveheart, when the English king, Edward, is seeking to extend his influence north of the border. And William Wallace, played by Mel Gibson in the film, manages to keep the English out, and this is finally confirmed at a decisive battle that took place just over, well, exactly 700 years ago in July 1314, when the Scots managed to push the English out of Scotland, and by 1328 there was a treaty recognising Scotland and England as independent countries.
Mm-hmm. We are hearing in our news, though, 307 years would be the union that would be dissolved if the yes vote wins here. Tell us what happened 307 years ago.
Right. Well, what basically gets us up to 307 years ago is the death of Queen Elizabeth I in 1603. Her successor is the King of Scotland, who becomes the King of England in 1603, King James I. And this puts pressure on the people to join a United Kingdom, to form a United Kingdom. King James called himself the King of Britons when he became the king. He had coins minted describing himself thus, but he was unable to persuade the English in legislation that he tried to put through in 1607 to join with Scotland. A century later, in 1707, that's when the union happened. The background to that was some disastrous investment by the Scottish elites. They tried to set up a colony called the Darien Scheme in Panama. It was and it was a complete disaster. So Scotland was bankrupt. The question of merger, fusion, came back again on the table, and there was a negotiation, and Scotland joined the United Kingdom in 1707. It was a merger. We preserved certain important aspects of Scottish life. So, for example, well, the most important thing was the church in Scotland, but there were other things, specifically the education system, which is still different in Scotland, and also from my background, I'm a lawyer, Scottish law was preserved, so that when there was legislation produced after 1707 by the new Parliament of Great Britain in London, it produced legislation for England and Wales, but it also produced separate legislation for Scotland. So this meant that from 1707 onwards, we were a United Kingdom, but there's always been a distinct Scottish law, and there has never been any such thing as British law. Mm-hmm. It simply doesn't exist.
So when does this move toward independence from the United Kingdom get started?
Well, basically, there's always a fringe element who think that union should never have happened, of course. And the poet, the Scottish poet Robert Burns, wrote a song describing the parcel of rogues in a nation who were bought and sold by English gold. And so there was always this small fringe group who thought we never had should have united with the English. But it's really in the 20th century that the formation of a party called the Scottish National Party, the SNP, in the 1930s, it really starts this movement off. It's not really popular. In 1945, they have their first elected member of the British Parliament. But it's in the 1960s when they have a surprise election victory in 1967. The game changer is oil. If any of your listeners have been following the debate, oil is one of the big uncertainties in this. And in the late 1960s, early 1970s, oil was discovered off the coast of Scotland. And because of the geographical shape of the United Kingdom, most of the continental shelf, most of the, you know, the seabed that extends quite far out from the United Kingdom is outside Scotland. So the Scottish nationalists, who'd previously been a fringe group, started to campaign on the basis that it's Scotland's oil. They came up with very emotive posters in which they showed people, old people who were poor, suffering from hypothermia in one example, and saying, why should she have hypothermia when we are an oil-rich nation? So this really was the game changer for the Scottish National Party.
Mm-hmm. Though Scotland has, in recent years, gained greater autonomy, correct?
Well, yeah, because of the influence of the Scottish National Party, we had two referendums. The first one was in 1979, when, although Scotland voted yes, they didn't vote with sufficient enthusiasm to get this autonomy. And after 18 years of Margaret Thatcher, well, 11 years of Margaret Thatcher and 7 years of John Major, there had been this consensus within Scotland that there had to be some kind of autonomy, so that when Tony Blair was elected as the Prime Minister in May 1997, he already had this this package for what we call devolution, in which Scotland would have its own parliament already set up. All of the rules and all of the procedures were prepared. I've compared it to one of these meals that you buy in the supermarket. that you just put in the microwave, press the button, you've got devolution. That really was what Tony Blair had in 1997. He had a referendum by September 1997. I voted in that referendum, and I voted yes. And there the Scots voted for this autonomy, which is called devolution. And by 1998, there was legislation setting up the parliament, and the parliament itself opened in May 1999.
And yet, this greater autonomy granted then did not satisfy Scotland, placate the independence movement. Was that the thought that Tony Blair had at the time?
Well, yes. I was just talking about this last night. What were we thinking when we voted for this autonomy, this thing called devolution? And in my opinion, we were more focused on the past 18 years when Scotland had been voting for one type of politician, but getting a politician from the other extreme, getting, you know, Margaret Thatcher especially. A lot of people were impressed by Margaret Thatcher, but the Scots didn't really understand her, I don't think. They didn't really appreciate her to the same extent that the English did.
Mm-hmm. In terms of domestic policy, just to make that clear, is Scotland more liberal, generally speaking, than England? Is that why? And these conservative elements that Margaret Thatcher, being, of course, one of them, have driven a wedge there or made many Scots unhappy with their leadership?
Yeah. It's basically, Scotland, when it votes, tends to vote more towards the left than towards the right. And this has been the pattern of their voting, certainly since the 1970s. I think in the 1950s and 60s, Scotland was a bit more right-wing. But certainly in the last 40 years, Scotland has voted towards the left. And again, Margaret Thatcher, for any of your listeners who remember Margaret Thatcher, she wasn't a consensus politician. She wasn't a one-nation politician. So
not the Iron Lady, no.
No. So you either liked her or you didn't like her. And sadly, it became a kind of uniting force because the people of Scotland didn't seem to understand her, or most of the people of Scotland didn't seem to understand her. And during this period, the vote for her party just kept going down. There's a joke even today that after China lent two pandas to Scotland's to the zoo in Edinburgh, that there are more pandas in Scotland than Conservative members of Parliament. There's only one. So,
Derek Wilson is my guest. If you've just joined us, he's visiting a professor at Drake University in Des Moines, actually a law professor at the University of Nantes in France, a Scotsman living in France, also assistant director of the Drake Law Summer in France program. If you have a question about the referendum on Scottish independence to take place tomorrow, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. You've, of course, been absorbing our media here. Here's something recently, Derek Wilson, I'd like to play that many of our listeners may have also seen on this week's Last Week Tonight. It's a comedy show hosted by an Englishman, a Brit, John Oliver. He spent some time explaining the stakes in the upcoming election and putting Scotland's relationship with the UK into perspective.
So Scotland and England have been involved in something of a 300-year arranged marriage. And look, I will be the first one to acknowledge England has been a little bit of a dick since the honeymoon. In 1746, we actually banned the kilt just because we knew they liked it. And then we chose God Save the King as the UK's national anthem, a song which at one point had a verse referencing rebellious Scots to crush. Although, to be fair, we later realised that was wrong and replaced it with a line about pissing on the Welsh.
John Oliver, last week tonight, addressing Welsh independence. I don't know if you know John Oliver, have watched him, but I know you've been soaking up the media. There's a lot of it going on. What have you been seeing that's jumped out at you, Derek?
People have been sending me quite a lot of things like that. So I have actually got this clip from John Oliver on one of the many emails that people have been sending me, my colleagues and so on, but I haven't actually watched it yet. A very funny clip that I've seen is the chap, the character, the Scottish character from The Simpsons, groundkeeper Willie, telling people that they should be voting yes for for whatever reason, he claims that he's got the tattoo on his stomach, on his chest, saying we should vote yes is a birthmark. So that was one of the quite humorous things that I've seen.
Oh, yep. Go ahead.
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the press that I've been following. It's been very interesting to see. It's, you know, it's mainly quite fair, I think. The international reporting that's happening, they're putting it quite well.
Both sides in the Scottish independence referendum debate, Derek, have seized on a pledge by the three main Westminster parties to devolve more powers, a pledge signed by David Cameron, Ed Miliband and Nick Clegg, promise equitable sharing of resources, preserving something called the Barnett funding formula. So this is coming late to hopefully sway people to a no vote. The Yes campaign described it as an insult to voters and asked why it had taken so long to make this offer. How do you see that?
Well, this really is the problem with the referendum being a yes-no question. Because the yes, because it's, you're voting yes to ask some unknown negotiators to negotiate for independence, we don't know what the final picture is going to be. So it's meant that the No campaign have spent the last couple of years simply saying, whenever the SNP, the Yes campaign, have said, we can have this, the No campaign have said, how do you know? So for them to come out in the last week of the campaign with a whole lot of pledges just because the polls have swung the other way, the boot is now on the other foot, and it is in some ways an insult because, you know, how do we know what the detail is? And none of the politicians have been able to give any detail about exactly what more power means for Scotland, apart from the fact that you're definitely going to have more power. Mm-hmm. Very vague. And they've been spending 2 years complaining about how vague the other side have been. So it really is all boils down basically to the fact that there is only one question. And I suppose there is the other problem that the No campaign comprises three political parties. And it's very hard to get three political parties to sing from the same hymn sheet. So not too easy for them either.
Derek,
it is late.
Derek Wilson, you are now in Des Moines visiting at Drake University. What have you been hearing when you contact your fellow Scotsmen, Scotswomen, back in the homeland? Do you get a different perspective on the debate than you get through the media?
Certainly. I think one of my friends who works for the Scottish government, he told me that social media is really quite an interesting thing. It's quite a big element of the campaign. And I've been observing comments from my nephews and nieces on Facebook, speaking with their friends, which is quite interesting, because they're not really following the traditional media at all. In fact, there was one comment where they were talking about the old people like us who listen to the radio, watch the television, read the press, and we believe all the lies that are being peddled. Because, you know, so it's quite interesting to see how there's a generational thing where the younger kids are swapping information between them, they all seem to be much more in favour of voting yes.
Now, this yes vote has come to the fore in recent weeks because, wasn't it true for a long time, the no vote was shown to be ahead in the polls? What caused the yes vote in favour? We don't know. We will know when the vote results are tallied tomorrow. But they're neck and neck now. What caused the yes vote to surge in popularity?
It's very hard to pinpoint. I think if you look at the election results for the Scottish Parliament in 2011, the Scottish National Party managed to engineer a swing because they were second in the polls 2 weeks before the election. And not only did they overtake the Labour Party, who had been ahead in the polls, but they overtook all of the other parties. So they had 69 out of 129 of the members of the Scottish Parliament in that election. And so they're past masters at being able to just know when to turn the heat up or to, you know, pull the levers and get things started. And they seem to have timed it very well, so that there is this late surge. And again, the question is it a snowball that's getting bigger and bigger, or is it just a pendulum that might swing the other way before Thursday? Nobody knows.
We heard in recent days, this is an odd fact of this event. On Monday, the Electoral Commission published figures that showed the Scottish lottery winners, the Weirs, a couple, were the biggest donor to the Yes Scotland campaign over the last 9 months, gifting a total of $1.5 million in pounds. Could history books tell of a lucky lottery ticket that tipped the balance in favor of Scottish independence, you think, Derek?
That's very hard to say. This campaign is happening in so many levels, and everyone is trying everything to communicate. And I think social media is also a very big element.
You spoke last night in Des Moines about this, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What kind of misperceptions or reaction did you get from Iowans who came and were interested in this debate?
Well, I spoke for a good hour before they asked any questions, and I thought their questions were all very good. I don't think, there are too many misperceptions. Certainly not in the audience last night. Maybe there were before I started to talk, but the questions were very good, so I couldn't really say that people have any misperceptions.
What does it? I mean, we are very interested in it. Obviously, our media is too. But are there compelling reasons we should care about whether Scotland is part of the United Kingdom or not?
Well, it's really all about the United Kingdom as one of the United States' best friends. We have been fairly faithful allies to the United States over recent years. And so I think it suits the United States strategically in the world to have a strong United Kingdom supporting whatever policy initiatives are taken by the United States. And with Scotland going, there's no doubt that the UK will be diminished somehow. Some are saying that the permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council could also be up for grabs. Why is such a small country geographically, although they're only losing 5 million people, but why is this smaller country still allowed to sit on the United Nations Security Council?
Okay, Derek Wilson, we'll talk about more consequences. Should the vote be yes in favor of Scottish independence in the historic vote tomorrow? Derek Wilson is with us. You hear he's a Scotsman, global practitioner in residence at Drake University, law professor at the University of Nantes in France. And we're so glad to have him in our Des Moines studio to talk about this topic for the entire hour. 1-866-780-9100. Your questions about the referendum on Scottish independence. Back with more in just a moment. It's River to River. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The opinion polls put the two sides neck and neck. Tomorrow's historic referendum that could see Scotland split from the United Kingdom after 307 years. We're talking about possible Scottish independence and the referendum background on it with Derek Wilson, a Scotsman. He's living in France, but right now he's in residence at Drake University, law professor at the University of Nantes in France, and assistant director of the Drake Law Summer in France program, and fielding all kinds of questions that you may have about the referendum on Scottish independence. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's understand a little bit more about the yes vote here, the Scottish independence movement on August 25th, in a debate over the pros and cons of Scottish independence hosted by the BBC. Alex Salmond, the First Minister of Scotland, laid out the case simply this way.
We can take matters into Scottish hands. Next to it, no one wants to go backwards. More and more Scots want to complete the home rule journey. The case for independence depends on a simple proposition. No one, absolutely no one, will run the affairs of this country better than the people who live and work in Scotland. No one cares more about Scotland. Now, just like in 1979, the voices of doom tell us we can't do it. We can't do what every other country takes for granted. And just like then, they are wrong. We are a rich nation. a resourceful people. We can create a prosperous nation and a fairer society, a real vision for the people of Scotland. This is our time. It's our moment. Let us do it now.
First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond. Derek Wilson, add to that. Help us understand this Scottish independence movement more.
Well, as the First Minister says, it really is this idea that we can take control of our own destiny. We've already got our own parliament, but it would have full parliamentary powers. And they've laid out this vision, which, it's quite an inspiring vision. They've produced an interim constitution, for example, in which they have all of these words like, phrases such as the Scottish people being sovereign. And they talk in their Scotland's future consultation document that they published last year about they use words like Independence Day. So these are all very emotive ideas, and the idea that this little country can join the family of other countries on one level for any Scottish person, is quite inspiring. Whether it's a good idea really is the issue.
You mentioned that this is big on social media. Going back to your point you just mentioned on young people, do you think that the interest by the younger generation will translate into action in the U.S.? We don't often see an uproar on social media translating into action, I guess.
Well, the comedian Russell Brand was talking about on one of his posts on social media that was being passed around by my nephews and nieces, this is a real question for once. When people vote, they don't really feel as if they're voting to make any kind of difference. But the thing about the Scottish referendum is that this is a vote that will make a difference, and this is why the politicians are panicking, and this is why the people are so engaged, especially the young.
You mentioned, let's go back to the point oil. You mentioned this was a point in the past in which contributed heavily to this pro-independence movement. David Cameron, let's listen to a clip from him on the floor of the House of Commons. British Prime Minister David Cameron was asked about Scottish public opinion on oil revenues.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. A poll last week showed that 68% of Scots want oil revenues devolved to Scotland. Does the Prime Minister agree with 68% of Scots, or does he not?
If you ask a stupid question, you get a stupid answer, I think.
Derek Wilson, how has Prime Minister David Cameron handled himself here?
Well, the clip that you've just played is one that I've seen that people for the Yes campaign have been distributing to suggest that David Cameron has been arrogant. I would say he's in a difficult position because in the same way that the British lecturing people anywhere in the world is often taken very badly, especially with the Commonwealth countries in Africa, it's very hard for an English politician to come and lecture the Scots. So I understand his problem. My complaint, I suppose, is that perhaps he should have taken up the suggestion made more recently by the Welsh Assembly leader that as soon as the vote happened in 2011 and Scotland voted and gave a majority to a party that wished to break the country up, this was not just a matter for Scotland, but perhaps this was a matter for the rest of the United Kingdom. And again, he's been in a very difficult position recently with these last-minute vows and this last-minute pledge that they've signed.
If Scotland does vote for independence, would that be the end of his leadership?
I think his leadership would be in danger, but he's already caused problems within his own party by making this pledge without consulting his party to give more power to Scotland. So I think the future's looking quite difficult for David Cameron. I think he needs a yes vote. He is the full name of his party is the Conservative and Unionist Party, and while the Unionist idea is a reference more to Ireland than Scotland, a lot of people think that his future would be untenable. He said he won't resign, but his future would be untenable as the man in the chair when the United Kingdom broke up.
Derek Wilson is with us, if you just joined us. He's in residence at Drake University, a law professor at the University of Nantes in France, and answering our questions, giving us a lot of valuable background on the movement for Scottish independence, that historic vote tomorrow, referendum, which could see Scotland split from the United Kingdom. Some very important points we haven't touched on yet, and the hour is getting away from us. Derek Wilson, the UK's entire nuclear arsenal is based in Scotland. Mm-hmm. What would become of it in the case of a yes vote?
I think the first question is that there's a negotiation that's got to take place, but the position of the yes campaign and the Scottish government specifically is that there should be no nuclear weapons in Scotland. Under international law, if Scotland becomes a new country, then as a new country, they should not have nuclear weapons under the non-proliferation treaties. So they would be asking the rest of the UK to take their nuclear submarines and their nuclear warheads that are presently stored very safely in Scotland and put them somewhere else. And the problem is that it's very hard to find a good place that's not too close to oil pipelines or high population density that these weapons can go. So many people who believe in unilateral nuclear disarmament throughout the United Kingdom are hoping that Scotland will vote yes for this one reason, because it will be impossible to keep the nuclear weapons.
What are the repercussions then as a member of NATO?
Well, that could, for the United Kingdom, obviously, whether they're nuclear or not, that's one question. But it might have an implication for having a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. For NATO, Scotland wants to join NATO, and pressure might be put on Scotland if it wants to join NATO for being awkward about getting the British nuclear weapons out of Scotland. So there might be some kind of arrangement that would have to be discussed. Certainly the United Kingdom is already home to American army bases in England. So it wouldn't be unusual, it wouldn't be extraordinary if Scotland were to join NATO on becoming independent, for Scotland to host these nuclear weapons within their country. But at the very least, it's a bargaining chip. And for some people, if the people of Scotland reject the idea of keeping nuclear weapons on their territory, it could cause an enormous headache for the UK and for NATO.
Let's get to a couple of questions posed by our listeners. Ethan asks on Twitter, do you feel England is holding down Scotland with making decisions for them while only having one representative in Scotland?
It's not really, the debate has never been painted as England holding down Scotland. The Scottish First Minister uses the word Westminster, which is a reference to the Westminster Parliament. And the system that is in place is holding down Scotland and holding back Scotland. I suppose it depends on your politics, whether you think Scotland is being held down by the current position. But I would certainly say that using the word England is quite emotive. It's the current arrangement, according to the nationalists, this is holding Scotland back. Of course, on the other side, they're saying that by being part of this union, we're better together, we're more secure. They give examples like the financial problems after the subprime crisis in 2007-2008, when two big Scottish banks crashed and had to be bailed out, as examples of how being part of this bigger union, whenever you know the bad weather comes in, we can shelter each other and help each other, and that's an aspect of being British.
So, Frank asks also on our Twitter, do you think that, and he uses this phrase, democracy is deadlock in the case of Scotland?
Democracy is deadlock in the case of Scotland.
I can't say more than what is there. Perhaps we should move on I don't have an idea on that either. Let's go to this tweet by Chris. Why has it taken so long for independence to be mainstream? How does Scotland feel about Adam Smith economics? From Chris on our Twitter page.
On the first question about why it's taken so long to become mainstream is that the United Kingdom has an electoral system called First Past the Post, where in each little area, only the party that comes first is elected. So there's no representation for the votes of the parties coming second, third and fourth. So the Scottish National Party were getting 30% of the vote in the early 1970s. And that could have allowed them to increase their support. But this was kept down by the electoral system. Mm-hmm. As regards Adam Smith, I'm not an economist. He is Scottish and the father of economics. But what do we think of Adam Smith? I think we're probably more comfortable with Keynes and this social tax and spend concept of economics than the laissez-faire
okay.
idea.
Finishing up our time with Derek Wilson this hour, let's go to David in Iowa City, who's been listening. You have a question, David?
I do. I assume the United Kingdom has all kinds of rules and regulations that connect the countries. If the yes vote passes, what authority does England or the remaining countries of the United Kingdom have to fight it or undo it or resist it?
Good question. In October 2012, the Prime Minister signed an agreement with the First Minister of Scotland saying that there would be a referendum and that it would be respected. The result would be respected. So, technically, strictly speaking, if Scotland votes yes by 1% or by one vote, then that decision should be respected by the present government. It is an agreement between politicians. It's not anything that's enacted in legislation.
Mm-hmm. Can we see any scenario when a yes vote would be resisted somehow? There is no indication of that, is there?
Well, strictly speaking, it shouldn't be resisted. Everyone's saying that the result will be respected. Obviously, if a very narrow yes vote could be put into danger by some other events on the calendar. The United Kingdom is programmed to have a general election for the whole of the United Kingdom in May of next year. And this would be a time when the Scottish people would be expressing their votes again. And if they were to vote very narrowly for independence and show some kind of sign that they were having cold feet, then it could become quite murky.
Mm-hmm. This whole debate that's been brought across the Atlantic to our shores has really given us a primer on all things Scottish, including the Union Jack, the flag. This is a mixture. The Union Jack was formed partly from the Scottish flag.
Well, that's right. Basically, the red cross is England. The other red cross going sideways is Ireland, and the blue part with the white cross is Scotland. It's a combination of the three flags. Sadly, Wales isn't represented on that, but this iconic emblem of the United Kingdom is a mixture of the flags of three of its nations.
One of the questions lower on the priority list, but would the flag have to be changed?
Well, that's obviously a question. South Africa had to change its flag or chose to change its flag once it moved away from apartheid. These are different conditions, of course, but it would be strange to have the blue part in the flag if the country or a part of that country was no longer in the UK. So possibly yes.
Would an independent Scotland recognise Queen Elizabeth as their queen?
Yeah. In the Constitution, Article 9, the interim Constitution, they've circumvented any problems because, the British, all of us, the Queen is someone that a lot of British people love, and this was shown during her Jubilee celebrations a couple of years ago. They've circumvented any problem on that by saying that she will be the head of state. So in the interim constitution, that's the first proposal. She will remain as the head of state, the person who signs the legislation. She doesn't affect any legislation in the current constitution, but she would remain the head of state. She presently signs legislation from the Scottish Parliament. So that's how they're.
How can there be such a love for the Queen when there is a large number of people who are not in love with being part of the United Kingdom?
Well, Alex Salmond made the point that the Union of the Crowns happened in 1603 and the Union of the Parliaments happened a century later. And so we could have the Parliaments splitting up and still retain the monarchy. So I'm sure there are a lot of Scottish people who do not want to keep the Queen, but you know, they've dealt with that question by simply saying that's a, you know, just like Australia or any of the other countries that still keep Queen Elizabeth as their queen, we can have a vote sometime in the future about retaining the monarchy or not. Very surprisingly, Australia voted to keep the monarchy in their last referendum on the subject. So she's got the job if she wants it, I think.
Do you know how soon we'll have results from tomorrow's vote in Scotland? Will we know them tomorrow?
You'll wake up on Friday morning and we should have the result because they're expecting the first results in the course of the night. There's a six-hour time gap between Iowa and the United Kingdom. So by the end of Thursday night, the start of Friday morning, results will be coming through from all of the districts where the counting is taking place. Glasgow's the biggest area, so that might take the longest.
You mentioned your previous yes vote in a referendum to do with more autonomy for Scotland. How will you vote this time, or do you get to vote as an expatriate?
Well, that's it. This is a vote for people living in Scotland, as the First Minister said in the clip that you played. It's only the people living in Scotland and working there, contributing, that have the vote. So I don't have a vote, although it could have an effect on me. I've still got, you know, my citizenship.
How would you vote?
I don't know. Anyone asks me, sometimes I feel I would vote yes. Sometimes I feel I would vote no. I really don't know how I would vote. I think I would be part of the 8% don't knows who, because it's such a huge question.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a prediction? Do you have a feeling, a sense? If you had to place a bet right now, what would you say was going to happen?
It's going to be close, which is the worst thing. I think independence will come one day because of devolution. I think devolution was the mistake looking back, but I really don't know. Because of 2011, it really is impossible to say. They swung in one direction over 2 weeks in such a big way that it could very easily be a yes vote. But the polls are still saying no.
And we've heard from David Cameron, if it's a yes vote, it's for all time. Mm. If it's a no vote, that you're saying it doesn't settle the matter once and for all? We could have another referendum in some years?
The politicians on the yes side are pretty unanimous that they see this as a generational thing. So the last referendum was in 1997. The one before that on the Constitution was in 1979. So we're not talking about another referendum. In 3, 4, 5 years' time, we're talking about maybe 15 years or 20 years if there's a sustained interest in it. Obviously, a very narrow decision means that it won't go away.
Right. A generational decision. Very quickly, before we have to go, how does it break down in the polling in terms of demographics? If it was left up to the young people under 30, would this pass?
Possibly, yes. But at the moment, the Yes campaign are trying to convert the poorer people in Glasgow towards voting. You know, Labour supporters in Glasgow, that's what they're aiming at. And also the elderly who fear they would lose their pension. So it's hard to pick out a demographic. Everyone's pretty much agreed on that.
Mm. I hear the tension in your voice. You'll be doing anything special tomorrow during the vote, or as the returns come in?
I'm just terrified. It's outrageous that this decision is coming along, and it's going to be enormous if they vote yes. Yeah. So it's a very strange.
Do you have the feeling time. you want to be in Scotland at this time, a historic moment? I bet.
Well, that was my first plan, was to be there at the time. I've got a friend who works in the Scottish government, so I was hoping to follow him around as he advised the government there. But, yeah, I would love to be there.
Okay. Derek Wilson, it's been a pleasure sharing the hour with you. Global practitioner in residence at Drake University, law professor at the University of Nantes in France, a Scotsman living in France, and we're happy to have him living here in Iowa. And as you said at the beginning, enjoying your time. We've enjoyed our time with you, Derek Wilson. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.